Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can get a daily dose of information about your favorite NBA and NFL teams, which now includes the Pacers right here. My name's Tom Lewis of IndyCornrows.com, and today, for that daily dose of Pacers info, we'll hit the latest news and injury info from the field house, including reaction to comments from Nate McMillan, Paul George, and Monte Ellis. And then we'll also talk about the results from the annual NBA GM survey on a variety of topics about the NBA this coming season. Now, the Pacers are in Milwaukee for their last practice game against the Bucks on Wednesday night. Yay! Yes, there remains plenty of intrigue about what the Pacers are trying to become and what they're doing and how they're going to get there, but it still seems like preseason mode is in full effect, and I, for one, am anxious to see this team play for real, which is only now 1 week away. Bring on the Mavericks. Okay, now before the Pacers left town on Tuesday, they practiced at the field house. Nate McMillan and a few players spoke with the media on the topics du jour, which appeared to be the offense, and in particular half-court offense. But although McMillan was asked about concerns at this point in camp or how things are going, and he opened with defense, mentioning that they're definitely allowing too many points in certain quarters and at times struggling to keep guys in front of them and definitely sending them to the free throw line too much. But, he's happy with the way they're taking care of the ball on offense and working on their conditioning to push the tempo. So he understands that when you push the tempo, the players have to make those decisions on the fly when to attack and when to slow down, set up, and execute in the half court. So everything is not perfect, and as a coach, I don't think he'll ever think that everything is great, but for preseason, it's not unexpected, and he's happy with the way the team is playing and improving. He also hit on an interesting topic when asked about himself getting back into head coaching mode and how the preseason is good. He mentioned it's good for him to get back into the groove as a head coach and, recognizing situations, calling the game, and putting his team in position to be productive. And he joked that he thought he might be sitting down a little bit more, but it doesn't take long before he's up and roaming the sidelines. So he also mentioned that he is taking a more hands-on approach to his role than he did towards the end of his time in Portland. He said in Portland he delegated a lot more over the last couple of years and thought at the end of that, when taking stock of how things ended in Portland, that if he got a chance to coach again, he'd be better off being more hands-on like he was while coaching in Seattle and his early years in Portland. While he still delegates and mentioned all of the assistant coaches and the various duties they have with the offense and defense, he's right in the mix with them and adding his touch to what is being taught and emphasized. So I thought that was an interesting little comment about how he's approaching things. this time around as a head coach. Paul George was queried about the offense, as mentioned of the half court, and maybe what's different compared to last year and the years prior. And main thing PG mentioned was that, you know, they're using more spread sets and space and passing as opposed to last year and in the years prior, when everything was run on a pick and roll or dump it down and work through the bigs. So the plays are set up for a team that's more guard-oriented, you know, with Jeff Teague handling it and or Monte Ellis or Aaron Brooks, guys who can attack with the ball, and that allows them to be in attack mode and also control the tempo and push it when there's opportunities. And, you know, PG mentioned that he's in great shape. He feels like the team is in great shape, and kind of pointed to Al Jefferson as being a guy that he notices, you know, running up and down the court, not begging out of any drills or extra running, and pushing to stay on the court, which is kind of a good indicator that the whole team is in shape. So I guess that kind of puts Al at the back of the train on the shape meter, but it was a good example that the full team is buying into being ready to run. So Monte Ellis also kind of asked a similar question. I thought it was interesting because a similar question as far as what's different from last year, and I was half expecting him to say nothing or it's about the same, but he too mentioned the same thing, that the offense is a lot more open, and they have to pass and move around to create open shots for each other, and that's the emphasis of the offense. So right in sync with PG, so that's a good thing. And then he also was asked about Glenn Robinson III and how, like, maybe the vets are helping him along, and he kind of shut down any big impact that they're having, and gave Robinson credit for all the work he put in the off season and during preseason, and kind of mentioned that their role is just to keep encouraging him to continue to put in that work. So, you know, he doesn't think Robinson needs anything else from the vets other than that type of support. And also mentioned that he's always found camp as a grind to develop conditioning and that way. It's kind of similar because they were hoping to play at this fast pace last year, even though it didn't hold. But, you know, the idea is to get everybody in shape so that in the heat of games, when guys may be getting tired, they're still able to execute. And then he was asked, quite simply, what Nate has brought to the table this year. And he just said he holds guys accountable. That's it. And mentioned that, you know, everyone accepts it and they're on the same page. And everyone knows that McMillan wants the best for the team and knows what kind of team they can have. So that they're all on board. But I found it kind of interesting to think about Monte as a guy that, you know, kind of has had a reputation as a wild card throughout his career, maybe almost a lone wolf type player who may stray from the team concept, might be a guy who would clash with a coach if he's asked to conform too much. But he has been one of the most vocal guys about this team needing the accountability and discipline, and that he seems happy that they're getting that so far, at least from McMillan. So I think he understands what the team needs to do to grow. Having been through a variety of different styles of coaches and teams over the years, and you can hear that old head veteran game in him being expressed there when he so clearly states that accountability is the biggest thing that Nate is bringing to the table. So I also want to mention, I know Mark Monteith wrote an article about some of these comments and some more comments from McMillan than the videos that I watched on Pacers.com. So check out his latest article on Pacers.com. One thing about the offense that McMillan mentioned to him is that they kind of cycle through four options. That's how he wants the players to think on the fly. You know, these are basically your reads as far as when to attack and when to set up. You know, starting with, okay, can he score in transition? Go get it. Next option is finding an open shot before the defense sets up. And then, if not, then, you know, spread the floor, try and react to the defense and create a shot. And if it all bogs down from there, then you're calling a set play. So I like that visualization of how guys with the ball, and not only the guy with the ball, who's kind of being the quarterback, but everybody else running the floor, filling the lanes, getting the right spots, has to react and understand what option they're going through. And that is obviously a key thing for this team to develop, is that chemistry on the court and the ability to have confidence in one another, that you know exactly where a guy's going to be, and you know that, oh, we're going for it in transition, or no, we're spreading the floor here, or no, here's a set play. So I thought that was an interesting comment, again, that Mark Monteith writes about in his latest column, so check it out. And there's no real surprises on the injury news front. Our friend CJ Miles is in the same predicament with the sore knee. He will travel with the team, but not expect to play. Aaron Brooks also listed as doubtful with a sore right knee. And Kevin Serafin is listed as questionable with a sore lower back. So Serafin hasn't played much since McMillan has been using mostly the 10-man rotation in the last few games. So it'll be interesting to see what his status is as we roll out of camp here and they cut down to 15, I would think. His name would be on the short list of guys for potentially being that 16th and odd man out, along with Jeremy Evans, maybe Rakeem Christmas. So we'll see how that plays out. But first, they have to finish the preseason tomorrow. So let me take a break here and once again thank the Locked On Podcast Network for all the support. Check out all the great content across the NBA and NFL shows on the network. I know Locked On Bucks has a nice discussion of how the Bucks can possibly use Tony Snell after acquiring him from Chicago for Michael Carter Williams. Also, the conference previews on Locked On NBA are well worth a listen, so check them out. Okay, let's move on to the annual GM survey, which ranks the top players and teams in a variety of categories heading into the season. Caitlin Cooper over at IndyCardinals.com broke down the results as they pertain to the Pacers. So check out her work. I wanted to just mention a couple things that stuck out to me from reading CC's work and also from looking through the results. Essentially, all the GMs are anonymously answer these questions. They can't vote for anybody on their team or for their team in any of the categories. So you're looking at the different a different view of how the league sees your team or sees your players here. And it's always interesting to see how they project. A couple things now. The survey should have been conducted minus Golden State and Kevin Durant. So the things that stuck out for me in particular, I mean, they should have conducted a second survey minus Golden State and Kevin Durant, since their offseason was hard to top and their expectations far exceed any other team before the regular season even tips. So there were a few categories that were heavily weighted, obviously, in the Warriors' direction. For instance, the Pacers finished tied for second with Utah in the category of the team with the best overall moves in the offseason, which is a pretty nice ranking. Although they garnered just 83.7% of the vote, while the Warriors were at over 83%. So you can see that was a lot of guys probably were just checking off Warriors and Durant, Steph Curry for a lot of these various topics without putting much thought into some other teams. So it would be kind of interesting to see if you were able to somehow throw out that high test score and get everybody else's opinion on the rest of the league. But the whole survey wasn't Warrior-centric, so the Pacers were picked to finish fourth in the Eastern Conference, behind Cleveland, Toronto, and Boston, which seems to make sense as you look around the East. Also, George Hill and Jeff Teague were ranked 1 and 2 in the category of most underrated player acquisition. So I thought that was interesting as well. Both expect to have a big impact on their new team, and also were part of that ranking where both Utah and Indiana finished up there in the best offseason category. So other Pacer mentions, Paul George finished in the running with MVP projections, ranked sixth, which is a boost over last year. Last season, the results were PG-free since the jury was out on his health in his comeback year. So the one area, though, that I was surprised at, and I know Caitlin hit on this and has some info to back up some of the faux outrage we have, is that it seems that the team and Paul George's defensive rep has taken a hit, and they weren't not among the top options for the best defense or defender. That, you know, is fine, makes sense. I know there have been a lot of changes to the team, and a lot of people put stock in Frank Vogel as setting up that defense for their style of play as well. So it does make sense that the team may not be up there, but, you know, Paul George as a defender is still pretty solid, and he wasn't listed among the best defenders, even among the best perimeter defenders. And, you know, I feel like I must be living in the biggest echo chamber around, that if, you know, people outside of the Pacers don't think Paul George is that great on defense. I had to go, I went back and looked at past results before the injury, and he was ranked third in the 2013-14 survey for perimeter defenders. And, I mean, that's when he was giving guys like Rudy Gay and one guy in particular, James Harden, just fits, giving them some rough nights. I know Harden has left the field house, I think, just shook after getting a little PG disease and taking more shots having more shots and points in the game. And some phenomenal efforts that I witnessed with my own two eyes. So it's not something I'm making up or thinking that was better because I'm looking at some stats or something. You know, just seeing a guy when he thinks he's got PG behind him, but he's, instead of taking a shot, he's looking over his shoulder because he knows he might be coming for the swat. He's spooked. So saw that a few times with PG against some of those good wing scores, and I think maybe some people may be missing on that, and we'll see. The Pacers are going to have a huge defensive year from Paul this year, and, you know, there's probably the fact that he's going to be relied on so much offensively that people may think it's hard for him to still have the same amount of impact on the defensive end, but we'll see. You know, it also raises a question: if so many, you know, front office people around the league don't see PG as one of the top defenders, and that's his essentially top skill, do they consider him a max player? I mean, that is a interesting topic. What's the market like for Paul George out there? Because if you're not taking stock of his defense, then the offense has been up and down, to say the least. And so that was kind of something else that popped into my head is, you know, how exactly are teams actually valuing PG? And, you know, as we mentioned, this season will determine a lot as far as his future with the team, and talking about his contract is futile until at least next summer. And a lot of that value, it sounds like, may be set this year as well around the league. So it was just a little surprising to see that lack of mention there on PG. So, all right, I'll get off complaining about that. But a few other players projected for the Pacers. For breakout season, Miles Turner finished third behind Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker. So that is some good company for the 20-year-old big man. GMs have obviously taken notice of the big fella. Also, Dan Burke received some votes. I think he finished tied for third among best assistants around the league. So no doubt that Larry Bird's constant mentioning of Dan Burke has resonated a bit and raised his profile around the league. So check out, you know, CC's piece on IndyCornrows.com, and, you know, the survey results are always fun to review because you're getting a little different context from GMs who are obviously following the game very closely, but from a little different view than the media, who also like to project these type of things. So always interesting to wade through those results every year. So, all right, I am on the road tomorrow and will not likely be able to put up a road pod, but if time presents itself in a layover situation, I will do my best. Thanks for listening to the show today. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the team heading into their final preseason game, along with any thoughts about the GM results. You can hit me up via email at indycornrows@gmail.com or on Twitter at indycornrows. And, you know, I continue to be excited about this podcast and putting it together, and I'm amazed at how much information comes out that we can discuss, and always want to have the listeners involved. So if you have a company that wants to reach men age 18 to 44, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Our rates are reasonable. So email me at indycornrows@gmail.com, and we can pursue that option. Thanks again for listening to the podcast, which you can find on audioboom.com. You can also subscribe to the pod on iTunes, with all prior episodes also available at both outlets. So check them out. Okay, that's a wrap for today. You've been listening to Locked On Pacers on the Locked On Podcast Network.
You got it.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa auto parts stores, while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.